Welcome to the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast, the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast.
Welcome everyone to the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast. My name's Steve Scotland. I'm the owner of Hot Chocolate Recruitment. And today I'm bringing you my third ever podcast. We've got a very interesting guest today. I know him personally. I think today you're going to get a bit of a laugh, maybe squirm a little bit. But in the end, we're going to dispel some myths. I really hope you're enjoying my podcasts. If you have any questions or would like to pass on some any messages to my guest, please email me at steve@hotchoc.com.au. I'm really looking forward to bringing you this podcast. Ever since I decided that I was going to start producing podcasts, I always had this guest in mind. I hope you have fun. I had a bit of fun making it. And I hope you enjoy the show. And so, Dr. Nick Demijuk, thanks for spending some time with Hot Chocolate Recruitment's podcast, where we interview ordinary people with extraordinary jobs. Now, Doc, no one knows what you do at this point, and I'll let you inform the listener, but I've been a worthy recipient of your services, and every time I speak to my mates about this subject, they've got a million and one questions. So it'd be a really good opportunity for you to dispel myths and have a bit of a chat about what it takes to do what you do. So, Doc, can you tell me a bit more about? Can you tell me exactly what you do?
Well, basically, my trademark name, Dr. Smith, implies, I Smith people. Basically, I perform vasectomies on males, and I do the odd neonatal circumcision as well.
Brilliant. Okay, tell me, so that's what you do at the moment. So you went to school as you went to university after school, and what, you went into med school and then graduated and then specialised in this sort of field?
Well, no, I went to med school, did a couple of years in hospital, and then went into general practice, and in medicine there's lots of paths, I suppose, people can take, and I've always been interested in doing different things, so I, you know, as well as doing general practice, I delivered babies for 21 years, I did a bit of skin cancer surgery, I started doing some vasectomies, while I was in hospital I was fortunate to have really good mentors, and a professor of urology taught me how to do baby circumcisions. So basically, you know, I've dabbled in medical politics, I've written the book on infection control for GPs in Australia, I've done lots of varied things in my career, but I suppose 5 years ago things came to a head because I'm married to a Queenslander, and my wife said, after 36 years of marriage or whatever it is, said, look, I'm going to leave you unless we, you know, get a job up on the Sunshine Coast. I'm sick of Melbourne. And so that's when I basically dropped everything else and went into vasectomies full time.
Okay. So my next question was, what was the light bulb moment where you decided to specialise in this field? So that's the light bulb moment. I guess that's good as incentive as any I've heard. In terms of the skills that you need to do it, besides a steady hand, what other skill sets do you think makes a good... What do you call yourself? Is it a vasectomist? Surely it's not that.
You know, I suppose it's a vasectomist. I suppose that's the closest thing that comes to mind. Look, I think the main skill set is, because of the way we do it under local anaesthetic, my patients are all alive and kicking. I mean, part of the deal is being able to talk rubbish to people all day long. You know, I meet lots of really interesting people, you know, from truck drivers to pilots to engineers, and basically trying to connect with them in some way is really the most important thing. You know, I mean, like, sometimes I get it wrong, but hopefully most times I get it right. So, look, I usually find something, you know, that I can talk to somebody about. I've had all sorts of people. I've had people fly from... I've had fly-in, fly-out mountain miners from everywhere in Australia. I've had two fly-in from Norway for the vasectomies. I've had guys that collect little Nemos off the coast at Maroochydore to sell to aquariums. I mean, I've had all sorts of patients with all sorts of occupations, and I think really just being able to talk to them and relate while you're chatting away and operating at the same time, that's the key to it.
The procedure. A lot of people ask me, what does it involve? You know, are you under? Are you staying in hospital for 2 days? It's far from that. Can you talk us through the procedure a bit?
Yeah, well, look, basically, people ring up and they speak to the receptionist, and if they've got some more detailed questions, they might speak to the nurse in my practice. We'll either send them out information sheets, or they can get that off the net from our website. And then on the day of the appointment, people come in, they speak to the nurse for about 10-15 minutes. The nurse runs through everything from the anatomy and the physiology of how everything works, what we're going to do, and checks if they've got any questions. She then gets them on the table. I come in, check that there's nothing else they've got that might be concerning them before we start, and away we go. And 10 to 15 minutes later, hopefully it's all good and they're off the table, and we run through what to do for the next couple of days, and then they're out the door. So all in all, it's pretty simple. Some people are really anxious and they'll want to come in, you know, beforehand for a consultation with me just to see who I am and just check out the surroundings, make sure that they feel comfortable. But the vast majority of people just come in and have it done on the day.
I'll go back to, I'm not going to let you off lightly, Doc. If you go in, the patient goes in, meets yourself after meeting the nurse and going through the procedure. You're sitting down in the, you're laying down on the bed, and then 15 minutes later, you're out. Let's talk about that 15 minutes. Can we talk about that 15 minutes and what it involves?
Sure. Well, it is pretty confronting for most blokes to have a strange bloke playing with their balls, and I must admit that that probably is, you know, a bit of an odd sort of situation to have to lie there and have somebody have a feel of your scrotum. And I find the tube, and then we inject some local anaesthetic. We can actually do a thing called no needle vasectomy. We don't actually inject any, but look, the needle we use is so fine that you really don't feel it going in so much. We mix the local anaesthetic with some bicarb, which actually stops the sting. So anyone that's been to the dentist or had stitches from the GP knows that the local stings. Well, we put stuff in it so it doesn't sting. So it's hard for people to envisage or believe that it's not going to be that painful. So we find the tubes, put a bit of local anaesthetic in both sides, and from then on, it's all downhill as far as, you know, worrying and pain, because there's really no pain after that. We then grip the tube through the skin with some what's called ring forceps. We make a small hole in the skin and get the bass out. And that hole is so small, and there's a lot of muscle in the scrotal skin, that it shrinks down to only be about 2 to 4 millimetres in size. So usually it's healed by itself in 2 days, doesn't need any stitches. Traditionally, most doctors in the past have made a cut on both sides and done stitches, but, you know, we've got this no scalpel technique where by just tearing a little hole in the skin, you don't damage very many blood vessels and you can pull the tubes out quite easily. We then tie off the top end of the tube, peel back the outside layers on the tube, chop a little piece out and drop it all back inside, do the same on the other side, and it's all over.
Can I ask you this? Do you, the end of the pipe that you cut, what do you do? Do you solder it closed? Like, how do you close it, I guess?
Okay, the top ends of the tube that's going around to the back of your bladder and to the seminal vesicle and the prostate gland, and then where the sperm would come out, that top end of the tube, we actually tie that off with some material that the body chews up by itself over, say, 3 months, and that stays sealed off. Once you've tied it off, it scars over and it stays tied off, even though the actual stitch itself will dissolve over the next 3 months. Whereas the blood vessels and the covering around the tube below that, we just peel that back, and it's a bit like ring barking a tree. We just, you know, cut through that bit of tube and take out a centimetre and a half and drop the bottom end inside. So the bottom end that's coming from the testicle stays open, and sperm that's still being made just comes out that tube and goes into your scrotum, gets reabsorbed by the body, and doesn't cause any problems.
Okay. So, all right, so how many a year would you do vasectomies? How many a year? So let me, just for the listeners' benefit, you've got a practice in Melbourne still, and you've got a practice in the Sunshine Coast, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
And how many procedures would you perform a year?
Probably 2,000 to 3,000 a year.
Wow. Wow, okay. I want to talk to you about circumcision. It's, am I right in saying it's a bit of a dying trade? Not a dying trade, but the requirements and the numbers aren't as what they used to be?
Look, definitely, you know, it's not as popular as it used to be. Pediatricians in Australia have got a particular set against circumcision. I mean, look, I'm not a particular proponent for it, but neither am I against it. So, I mean, I sit on the fence there. I've got my whole family was done, in the, you know, when I was born, it was just tradition. Everyone got done in Australia like they do in America. But I've got a son and we never got around to doing him. So it sort of gives you an indication that I'm not actually, you know, strongly in one camp or the other. The problem for patients, though, is that at the moment, paediatricians are so against it that they say that it's best done after 6 months under a general anaesthetic. And for most people that haven't got private insurance, that's going to mean a very expensive $2,000 to $3,000 event later in the kid's life, when it can be done really cheaply, simply, and much more safely when the babies are very young.
Have you ever circumcised a grown man?
No, no.
Right. Okay. I used to be a picture. My old man used to be a picture framer, and I thought to myself, I'm going to learn that one day. And so Dad would give me some offcuts and, here, son, go put this picture frame. I'll teach you how to do it, you know. Now, so that's picture framing. If we're talking about circumcision, you don't have too many offcuts to work with. And how do you train to circumcise someone? What's the training involved? You know, I'm trying to get this image in my mind. Do you have, like, little models that you can use, or how do you train for something like that?
Unfortunately, in medicine, there aren't very many models, and what might shock you is that there's a common saying in medicine, see one, do one, teach one. And that's about how it goes in medicine when we're learning new tricks. So, very steep learning curve. You've got to get it right pretty well the first time you do it.
Wow. Okay, look, here's another question for you. I've heard some, you know, everyone goes and gets their hair cut from the hairdressers, and hairdressers are always whinging about people, whinging to them about, oh, you know, Andre, you know, can you go a bit shorter here, can you go a bit shorter there, and, oh, Luigi, can you, mate, you've taken a bit too much off the front. In terms of circumcision and whatnot, have you ever had someone come back to you later in life and say, oh, Doc, you know, I've got a bit too much there, or, you know, have you ever had someone come in and complain and try to work things through where they can get altered?
That's not that infrequent, really. I mean, like, occasionally, look, one of the tricks with circumcision is you've got to take off a little bit more than not enough. If you don't take enough off when you're doing a circumcision, you get the sort of frilly neck lizard look, and that's likely to generate complaints. So you don't want that to be happening.
Yeah, okay. Rightio, vasectomies. Let's go back to vasectomies. I've had one, so you've performed the procedure on me. I've always thought of vasectomies as diffusing a bomb, if you will. Have you ever, if you look at it in that context, have you ever cut the red wire when you should have cut the blue wire?
Look, I sometimes joke with patients and say, you know, when the nurse cuts the tube, I say, oh, you've cut the wrong one. And that sort of works the best when you've got a new nurse and she doesn't really know, because the nurse takes a big breath in and steps back and goes, ooh, and the patient then has a heart attack. So that's probably the best time to do that. The trouble is most of my nurses very quickly figure out that I've got a bit of a sense of humour, so that joke doesn't carry that well, and nobody seems to get too frightened by it. But look, occasionally, very, very occasionally, there is a lot of variation in people's tubes, and occasionally the tube can be very, very fine, and it can be very hard to tell it from a blood vessel. And yeah, on the odd occasion, you can cut a blood vessel and think you've got the tube, when in fact you haven't.
Okay. Here's a question for you. We'll go back to the circumcision. I know I'm sort of cutting back and forth and whatnot. So a vision has come to in my mind, and a question that someone asked me a little while ago. What do you do with the offcut?
Well, that's actually defined, you know, under our infection control standards at the moment as clinical waste. So basically it goes into one of those yellow infectious waste bins where we put needles and other sharps. But it's interesting you mention that, because in fact the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne is now wanting me to keep the bits and actually send them to the Alfred, because they're going to grow skin from the stem cells that are in the cut off bit of foreskin.
Wow.
Apparently it's a really good source of skin cells that they can use for burns patients, and they've got a lot of trouble getting access to that, and they've approached me to send me any bits that I can send their way.
Do you have to get the patient's permission, like I guess the guardian?
Yeah, look, that's the thing, that's probably the most complicated part of the whole deal. The consent form, you know, they've got to put it through their ethics committee, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. But at the moment, we're just developing the consent form with them. We've basically got the consent form sewn up, and we're just working out on the mechanics of how we get these things delivered to the Alfred after we've done our operations.
For a sec there, Doc, when you started telling me about, well, we're going to keep it and then we're going to send it, for one second I thought you were going to say that you're going to send it back to the family as, like, you know, for the scrapbook or something. So I'm glad that you told me.
Well, people do that. People actually ask for the bits.
Stop it. What for? What possible reason would they need it for?
I've got no idea. Just like when you have your vasectomy, some people want their bits in a bottle to take home, you know?
Oh, you're kidding.
I'm not kidding. Whether it's to show the missus, to show the neighbours, the, I don't know.
Party trick,
kids next door, whatever it is. Requests never cease to amaze me, what people want to do.
Oh, goodness me. If a grown man came to you, Doc, and said, look, I've got some problems, I need a bit of a trim, would you perform the operation on a grown man?
No, but that's outside my field of expertise, and that would, for most men, that would need a general anaesthetic, and that really would be a hospital stay, and that would be pretty painful, you know.
Yeah, okay. I've got a couple of listener questions, if you don't mind. One of the questions, and to be honest with you, even when I spoke to the lady from the Daily today, it's a very, very unknown field. And when I got mine done about 3.5 years ago, I've got some really, really bizarre questions from my mates. And who really, there's a great ignorance out there about what, you know, what it involves and what are the after effects and et cetera, et cetera. One of the questions that I was asked by my friend Pierre is, will I put on weight after a vasectomy?
No. Look, there are a lot of misconceptions. And look, a vasectomy has nothing to do with your hormonal balance in your body. So, I mean, one of the commonest things with, it's interesting you said Pierre, with people from Europe, especially France and Italy, they worry that it's going to affect their testosterone level and they think their voice is going to go up, or they're not going to be quite a man and all this sort of stuff.
It's not like it's not quite castration, though, is it?
No, it's completely different, in fact. So, I mean, if you're going bald and you actually do get castrated, your hair loss will decrease and stop. But unfortunately, this doesn't affect your hormones. And if you're going bald, you'll still go bald if you have a vasectomy. Your voice won't go higher, so you won't get a job on The Voice or Australia's Got Talent. And it won't affect, you know, your weight or anything like that.
A friend of mine, this is another question. A friend of mine, Dave, he couldn't quite understand when a man and a woman, this is after a vasectomy, when a man and a woman are engaged in a magic cuddle, for example, his question was, what actually comes out during the magic or, you know, at the conclusion thereof?
What comes out?
Yeah.
This is where it's very hard for people to imagine, but there's two things that make up the semen, the stuff that comes out, and one is the sperm, and they come from your testicle, and that's about 1% of what comes out. But the 99% of the stuff that comes out is actually made by three glands that are actually behind your bladder. The first one is called the seminal vesicle, the second one's called the prostate gland, and the third one's called Cowper's gland. By far, far the majority of the fluid that comes out comes from your prostate. So most blokes know that there's a prostate gland tucked in underneath their bladder, and that's in fact where 99% of the stuff comes from. So if you cut the tube from your testicle, the bass, you stop the sperm getting into it, but the rest of the fluid is still made exactly like normal and comes out exactly like normal. So there's no way you can tell the difference before or after a vasectomy.
I think they had they formed an opinion that after the procedure, that when time came to express oneself, nothing actually came out. So, yeah, I'm glad that you dispelled that rumour. The last question, now this is not a listener question, this is a question that I've been asked many, 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 many times, and it's on the lips of everyone who's ever thought of it. Does it affect performance?
Well, no, it definitely doesn't affect performance unless you've got, you know, they're tender afterwards. That might slow you down a bit. But there's no effect on performance. And in fact, some people say it improves their performance because it takes away the anxiety of worrying about somebody getting pregnant. So in those cases, people actually say it's actually better for them.
Okay. One other question. So this is listener questions. After the procedure, you have to go get yourself tested after you express yourself a number of times. And I think the number of times was about 16 before you have to go and provide a sample to pathology to ascertain whether you're producing sperm. Why 16 times? Is that just a nice round number, or is that proven?
That's just a nice round number. Look, I usually say 10 to 14 times over 2 months, but people have all sorts of different figures. It might be 16 times over 3 months. The reason for that is that the sperm travel up from your testicle, and they're actually stored in the gland at the back of your bladder on top of the prostate in a gland called the seminal vesicle. And they sit there and they mature over a period of 2 to 3 months. And that gland is like almost like a sponge. And if you can imagine a sponge full of detergent, and if you squeeze it, a bit of detergent comes out every time. And you've got to squeeze it a fair number of times before all the detergent's out of the sponge. And it's the same thing with that gland above the prostate. And so that's why you've got to do it a number of times before it's all clear.
Okay. I've heard a wise man once said that if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life. Now, you 2,000-odd procedures a year. Is it for you, Doc, is it a job or is it a business now? Or is it both?
At the end of the day, I suppose it's a business, but for me, it's just what I do, and I enjoy it so much that to me, it's not like I can't imagine, it's not like going to work every day and, you know, slogging at some job you just don't like doing, you know. I mean, every day is different for me. I meet different people all day, every day. And I just have a great time. I have a great time with the nurses. If the patient's got no personality, I can always give the nurse a hard time or chat to her about what she's been doing, or, you know.
Yep. So, okay.
It's a win-win for me.
Okay. Funny story. We're getting on the lighter side of things. I remember with mine, you know, I was waiting in the waiting area pretending to read a magazine, and the guy before me came out and he looked at me, and I must have been white as a ghost. Now, I've got some colour to me, and I must have been white as a ghost. And he looked at me and he just said, "Look, oh, mate, you know, the wait is the worst. You'll be right. You'll be right." And then I've gone in and you've done your thing. And I remember you helped me off the table, and I was all ginger. I didn't know how to move. I didn't know, you know, if I was going to, you know, if I moved some way that something might fall out. And you said to me, "Doc," you said to me, "mate, grow up. You haven't had a bloody C-section." And I thought, "Oh, come on, mate, this is the first time I've ever done this." But as I walked out to the waiting room, there was three guys waiting for you to do your thing. And I looked at them and I could just see the fear etched on their face. There was a couple of, they were all pretending to read magazines, you know, trying to block everything out. But they all looked at me. One guy in particular looked at me and he didn't want to make eye contact, and he finally did. And I said to him, My words of wisdom was, "Oh, you'll be right, mate. You'll be right. The wait is the worst thing." So it was almost ironic. Well, what are some of the funny stuff that you've seen in your time?
Oh, look, the traditional one is people walk out like John Wayne, and, you know,
that would have been me. Yep.
They try and scare the next guy. But the best one I ever had was when I had the practice, and we were still down at Kurrumundi, and we shared a waiting room with QML Pathology, and there would have been about 15 people waiting to have their blood taken. And this bloke said to me before he walked out, he said, "Oh, you know, should I walk out there like John Wayne?" And I said, "Nah, look, everybody does that." So he wandered out, and he was wandered out shaking his head, and saw the guy waiting for the next vasectomy, and said to him in a loud voice so everybody could hear, "Mate, don't go in there. I'll come out with a vagina." And that was the audience of all these, you know, elderly people queuing up to have their blood test. And it sort of brought the place down.
Don't go in there. All right. What about bailouts? Have you ever been waiting there with your tools, your saw and your needles and stuff? Have you ever, like, a guy's walked in and thought, "Oh, this is not for me," and walked out and, you know, sort of turned to you and said, "Oh, look, the missus, she can have me for better or worse, I'm out of here." Have you ever had anyone bail out?
We've only had a few that really bailed out. You know, we've had guys bail out because they're, you know, because of sheer terror, I suppose. We had a guy bail out because his wife actually changed her mind the night before. But he was a really nice guy. Unfortunately, he had two kids that were Asperger's or autistic. And, you know, his wife, you know, thought, "Oh, gee, you know, are we making the right decision stopping now?" And, you know, he came and had a chat about it. And, like, he was quite good. But, look, it's very rare that, you know, most folks overcome their fear. And once they're there, they sort of feel a bit trapped. I mean, the toilet gets a bit of a workout, you know, with a nervous wee beforehand, but apart from that, generally we're pretty good.
What about fainting? Has anyone ever fainted on the table?
Well, yeah, look, fainting is an issue, and it never ceases to amaze me that blokes manage to faint while they're lying down. I mean, fainting, you know, the idea of a faint is that when your blood pressure drops, you fall to the ground so that, you know, blood can go back to your heart and back to your brain and you get better. But some blokes manage to actually perform the deed while they're lying flat on their back, which is pretty amazing. But we've got a bed that we can tilt back and keep them alive, so that won't get them out of the procedure.
Okay. Your advice for anyone who's sort of thinking about, like, a young med student or maybe even a career change or someone sort of coming through the ranks, what sort of advice would you give them about doing... not so much the circumcision, but more the vasectomy side. What sort of advice would you give them?
Oh, look, look, people get put off. Like, I mean, I've got a daughter doing medicine, and she's not that keen to be doing vasectomies. But people get put off. But it's actually, you know, a lot of fun, and it's an interesting thing to do, and, you know, you make a difference to people's lives, and it's all good, basically. You know, I find it very interesting. I get to meet, like I said, interesting people from all around the world. It's great.
The first one you ever done, were you scared? Like, what were you feeling when you're sort of getting ready for battle?
Oh, look, I was terrified. I mean, I still remember the first one. It took me nearly 3 hours. I mean, how that bloke, you know, still walked was beyond me. You know, like it was a day and a half at that one. The next patient I got was my receptionist. She had a husband with and 3 children, and we didn't tell him for about 5 years that he was only the second one I'd ever done. So once I'd done 2, I was away.
How many do you think you've done in your career?
Oh, John, I'm not much of a counter. 20,000, 30,000, I suppose. I don't know.
Wow. Doc, wrapping up, do you want to give your business a bit of a plug?
Well, if any of your listeners would like to come and see me, I'm Dr. Smith. You can get me by ringing 1-300-DR-SMITH or having a look on the web, drsmith.com.au. And, be pleased to meet any of your listeners that need my services.
Doc, thank you for your candid overview and your words of wisdom. I'm sure people would have had a bit of a laugh, but also dispel some myths out there about the procedure and what happens afterwards. So, Doc, thanks for spending time on Hot Chocolate Recruitment's podcast, interviewing ordinary people with extraordinary jobs.
Thanks, Steve. It was great.
No worries. Thanks, Doc. I really appreciate your time. Have a good sleep, eh?
Yeah, see ya.
See you, mate. Bye-bye.
There you have it, gents. Dr. Nick Demijuk from Dr. Snip. A little bit about vasectomies. Hopefully had a bit of a laugh and dispel any myths. I had a lot of fun making it, and I really appreciate Doc's input and courage going on the show. And remember, if you have any suggestions on who you want to be interviewed, if you're really interested to know a bit about a person's role and their history, drop me an email on steve@hotchoc.com.au or jump on Facebook. I've got a Facebook page, Hot Chocolate Recruitment. Just send me a message and I'll see what I can do. That's all for this episode. I really appreciate your time. I love bringing these podcasts to you guys, and I hope you keep listening. Thank you.
Welcome to the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast, the Hot Chocolate